There's a gigantic faux pas we've committed.
What is that?
Today is a special day. Today is a very special day.
Robin, do you know what today is?
Robin, what's today? It's your birthday. It's your birthday.
Happy birthday to you.
But gotcha.
We're going to make the whole podcast sing to you.
It's Robin's birthday. This episode will come out about 5 weeks after his birthday, but everyone should tweet out something real sweet.
So that Robin can look at the tweets in 5 months and go, oh yeah, it was my birthday.
A nice sweet tweet for our rockin' Robone.
I remember when I was 5 weeks younger.
God, those were the fucking days.
Those were the days.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Grow Up, a Saturday morning... Robin, stop!
That was so senseless.
Hi, everybody. You're listening to Grow Up, a Saturday morning podcast for nubile millennials with Maddie Gray.
My name? Oh. You are taking such liberties with my name. I'm Beanie Birthday Boy.
Are you ready? And I'm Catherine.
And we are a group of friends that gathers weekly to revisit some favorite forms of media from our childhoods and deconstruct them from an adult perspective, sussing out themes, images, and messages that we might not have recognized as children.
Now that we are officially launched, tweet us the name of your favorite television show, movie, book, video game, or comic book at GrowThePodUp, and we will add it to our list. And who knows, we might even do an episode based off of your favorite media.
You can also send your suggestions to growthepotup@gmail.com, an email account that is currently empty and in need of some love. This week, Motocrossed!
The Disney Channel original film.
Is it just me, or did it feel so much older than Luck of the Irish?
Just you.
Why?
I don't know. If you're talking about in terms of, like, Disney Channel movie original, I don't know anything about the style of those movies, so I couldn't say, like, oh, this was a different era from that one. But content-wise, I was surprised, because in Luck of the Irish, it was, like, very outdated, I think, in terms of the messages that they were sending. But this one felt more recent.
But I definitely caught themes of, like, what is masculinity and what is femininity? How do we embody those things when we're trying to, lack of a better term, pretend to be a male or female? Especially in 2001, when gender was so much more binary than it is now.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, Andrea is wearing fingernail polish and a bunch of boys make fun of her because she's dressed up as a man. But to me, I know that I live in a so-called liberal hub in Seattle, but if I saw a man with fingernail polish, I wouldn't even look twice.
Talking about the nail polish, I made a note, I called it Chekhov's ugly green nail polish.
What do you mean by that?
Because it was such an obvious moment in the beginning, like, they were really trying to draw our attention to the nail polish, and it was so ugly and green, and I was like, that's going to come up later, and it did. And she wore it the whole movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She never took it off.
Yeah. Which I thought was a really important symbol.
Actually, after the dad catches them, she ends up doing her nails again, but in a different color.
What is with the nail polish in this movie?
No, they do a lot of nail polish in this movie. I noticed that, too. Like, the mom does the nail polish for all of the trophy girlfriends, too.
Like, is it just that the writer had a fetish? Or is it a symbol?
Well, I think that it's the writer's interpretation of femininity.
I think it's the writer of this movie trying to do their best to establish a strong symbol throughout the movie that represents femininity.
Could it also be a symbol of the very thin veils we paint onto ourselves?
I think that that's an interesting thought process, and I would love to hear you extrapolate on that.
I had it a second ago, but then I started playing with a laser.
I see what you're saying, though. I see what you're saying, because if we look at it as a symbol, if we take it as a, you know, a symbol on face value, let's assume the writer wanted to say something specific. The lacquering, the sort of thin veneer, this disguise of femininity that is applied to, it is not something that comes naturally to these women, but it is also something that is universal among the women characters in this movie. All of them have nail polish in some way. All of them have that applied layer of femininity.
And even Andrea doesn't take off her nail polish when she's painting right. The boy.
It's so interesting because that's like one of the very few things that she's willing to maintain. Because Robin, I have a feeling that you probably have never worn a bunch of nail polish.
We did his nails once.
Well, yeah, but it takes a lot to maintain your fingernail polish. They chip constantly, and her nail polish was on point the entire movie.
I don't wear nail polish because it's hard.
It is, and I bite my nails, so it is impossible.
I'm biting my nails right now.
Stop it!
No, I will not stop it.
You stop it!
No.
It's Robin's birthday and you stop it!
Robin didn't tell me to stop biting my nails.
I say let them eat nails.
Let them eat fingernails.
I hate you both.
Thank you. I think we should start like a definitive ranking of all the Disney Channel original movies we watch. And I would put this number one and Luck of the Irish number two.
Because of the only two we've seen. Because
there's only
so far.
Yeah.
This was definitely better than Luck of the Irish. Absolutely.
No, yeah, I absolutely agree. I think even just like story structure wise, I kept saying to Kylie, there are a lot of things that these writers are doing really well in terms of construction, in terms of like getting us to feel specific ways about characters. Like for instance, the dad.
Sucks. He's the terrible fucking human being.
And like they did a really good job of making his worldview be seen as the bad one.
Well, the mom keeps talking about like, because I hate him so much, but then you get the mother saying like that he's the love of her life and saying nice things. So you know there's gotta be a redemptive side to him, which we get by the end. He's just very
doesn't there gotta be?
Huh?
Do we though?
Yeah, he redeems himself at the end.
I would argue that he has a long way to go to redeem himself still by the end of the movie, even though that he's come around, and he's shown the most minimal level of support for his daughter, but he has a lot of unlearning to do
but
before
he's starting
he gets to
do
be
it.
Redeemed. He started the process, which is good, but it literally took him having to see a man physically assault his daughter for him to actually step up and change.
Yeah.
Renee!
Oh,
Renee!
What a bitch.
Oh, what a bitch.
That
all
boy.
Of the men in this movie are just bad bitches.
Not all of the men in the movie are bad bitches. It's just two of them.
No, yeah, that's...
And the leader of...
Yeah.
And the leader of Dean's racing company.
But the fact that there are good men in this movie is something that I wanted to talk about specifically in terms of the younger brother.
Yes!
Because he is the, like, polar opposite. He is the direct antithesis of every other younger brother that we have seen in any other TV show or
movie. The second the younger brother gets introduced, I wrote, like, in all caps, "Will Robin hate this boy?" And then he was actually, like, quite pleasant through the movie. So I was like, we'll see what Robin says about this young boy. Because you hate
him. I hate those young boys in the movie because they are just such perpetuations of toxic masculinity in like, young boy form. But the great thing about this boy is that just like all of the other kids, like, great thing. They show, like, him as stereotypically being the, like, you know, mechanically minded, whatever, which is a stereotype. But that has a similarity, a sort of through line with so many of the other young boys that we've seen. But he uses his technological mindedness to support the women in his life, namely the main character of this movie, his sister. But instead of like using it to spy on and demean her, in Lizzie McGuire or like in Ginger. I think that's one of the things that they just did really well as a Disney movie, as like a showing people loving each other and not trying to make your younger brother's a villain. Just showing that it's possible to support your sister, your the women in your life.
Yeah.
You know what else I like about this boy?
What?
He is the catalyst for change for the mother. So the mom says, girls don't ride motorcycles. Well, they do, but not with boys. It's just not done. And it's the younger brother who is the one who asks, why? The entire movie, every time somebody said something like that, yeah. I was just like, why? Why is that?
It's just what we do.
And he's the first one, he's the first male character we see that like questions this status quo, that is willing to step up and be like,
yeah.
No, but doesn't that sound wrong to you? As a woman, as a mother, doesn't that sound wrong? It takes that childhood innocence to question this kind of authority. Because as a child, you're less restrained by these social constructs, and you're the one who's gonna question it in a room of people. So, yeah, let's give a quick little summary of what this movie's about.
It's about Twelfth Night.
This is a movie about a girl named Andrea Carson.
Hot.
She is pretty hot.
Yeah.
Let's get that out of the way. She's
very,
very
cute.
And that pixie cut on her
is,
oh my
very
god.
Good.
I definitely had a crush on Andrea Carson.
I, watching it this time, was like, I had a crush on her with the long hair, and then she cut her hair, and I was like, oh no. How will my heart stop fluttering?
What is this movie about? It's about a motocross family who, their oldest son
played
is
by
the...
Aaron Carter.
Is that Nick Carter, though?
No, there's no way, but he is definitely Aaron Carter.
He looks more like Nick Carter.
Maybe
than me.
Yeah. I'm just thinking of like Aaron Carter now. So it's Nick Carter and Aaron Carter are the brothers in this movie.
So wait, are we just claiming that this is a documentary? Are we claiming this is a documentary about Aaron Carter's life?
Yeah. And strangely
so
enough,
is this our conspiracy theory?
Is that the theory?
Yeah. This is about Nick Carter and Aaron Carter's sister. Because their last name is Carson, too. I was like, you're not even trying to hide it.
Guys, what is this movie about?
Boys like to ride motorcycles.
And girls like to cheerlead.
Yes. And once upon a time, a girl decided to ride a motorcycle and broke her brother.
To be fair, he broke his goddamn self.
Okay, no, wait. Yeah. Kylie watched this in Multiplicity just to make sure. And everything that he did that resulted in him breaking his leg was entirely on him.
It was his fault.
But she takes, like, not just the blame from the family, she puts the blame on herself. And to me, it felt like an allegory for, like, Eve.
It very much,
that
yes.
She went and she corrupted the boy.
And then she fell on the dagger for the family.
Yeah.
By doing something that she actually really loves.
And then... So then the mom, because she sneaks around, she decides to pretend to be the brother and play motorcycles for him. And the mom ends up asking, like, are you doing this because of feeling guilty, or are you doing it because you actually really love doing it? And that was a change, because from early on, she's just blaming herself so much. And it's like, oh, she's got to make things right. And no one asks her, but do you like motorcycles, maybe? Do you want to do this? And then it becomes about her.
Yeah.
I actually really love that moment because...
Yeah, I really like that.
Because Andrea's first response was, well, which one is going to make you let me do this? And her mom's like, I don't play that game. I just want the truth. And her reaction is, this is something I really want to do, and it's something I think I can do. She's a woman playing a man's game, and she has to adapt herself and then learn more, but she ends up beating them at their own game.
So once she starts pretending to be her brother, and she gets out there and starts racing guys, They beat the shit out of her for being a girl. But then she pretends to be a boy, and she still keeps losing.
This is the moment where we meet Dean, actually. So she's come in last place, and she's packing up her things to go. And Dean approaches.
A 250 rider.
He's a 250 rider, and he's hella cute.
When he showed up, I went, Paolo?
Paolo.
Because he's just too cute.
No, but he's clearly a demon out to get the Carson women.
No.
Nice. He is nice. He's very nice. He's a little dumb, but he's very nice. But Dean is the one who approaches Andy. And that is something that I really clocked, because we kind of see this relationship form between them, and it starts as a friendship. He's the one who begins their relationship. He's the one who approaches. He's the one who sees potential in her as a writer, and then they instantly click. This could have been like, if this movie had been made today, this could have been a really good moment for queer representation, mm-hmm. or at least questioning your sexuality, because I think that there was really space for Dean to question his. But instead, he's obsessed with the daughter of Henderson, his writing company. Her name's Farron.
She sucks.
The only thing that she's good for is she's pretty. Like, she's got the worst personality.
It just bothered me so much. The writers of this movie depicting a human being as worthy of an audience to scorn as female character, first of all, just like writing her that way. It's not like a real person, but just somebody that like we're supposed to despise. But then secondly, the way everybody talked, I was going to say the way the boys talked about her, but that also includes the main character as a boy, as her brother.
Right.
Yeah.
When she was pretending to be Andrew, would talk about like just trading this girl in such object terms. In the sense of like, can you get her for me? Yeah, oh, I can totally get her for you. Like, yeah, don't worry, she's yours, man. As if just because they have created this character to be shallow,
she can get got.
Yeah, just like trade her between males.
And it's not just trading her. They manipulate her too in order to get her on that first date with Dean.
Yeah, exactly.
They trick her.
And then create this fake version of Dean for her to fall in love with.
Yeah.
Which is degrading to her and Dean.
But that's, it just bothered me that was such a prevalent and totally unthought about aspect of, like, they didn't even consider that would be something that is not the way one behaves towards women.
Yeah.
And one of them
is a woman. Plays into just how women are taught to treat each other, that, you know, she has a crush on Dean, so Farron is her competition, not a fellow woman.
I noticed that she doesn't treat Farron like competition. She treats her like a man would treat her, because she's embodying a man. She's treating her like the commodity that Dean sees her as. Maybe commodity is not the right choice of words, but he's treating her like an object because she sees Dean treating her that way. And I don't know. In that situation for me, I feel like I would be instantly uncomfortable around this person because he just idolizes certain aspects of this woman and doesn't actually know her.
Yeah.
I don't know. It feels like a major turnoff for me if I was in that situation, seeing him ogle over this young woman without even knowing her, without ever getting a proper sentence out to her. And he learns by the end that he can't treat them that way. He meets a formidable foe in Andrea.
Coming back to his questioning his sexuality, because he does click with Andrea so early. The second he sees her as a woman and thinks that she's, you know, this sister, he is attracted to her immediately.
Immediately. I wrote down that when Dean sees Andrea as Andrea for the first time, he's awestruck. You can actually see his heart skip a beat. He gets tongue-tied the same way he did around Farron.
Yeah, which makes me think he had some repressed feelings for Andrew.
And then the first thing he says once he has this moment of not being able to speak, and then he goes, wow, you guys really look alike. And she's like, well, we are twins.
And you can tell he's attracted to her.
Absolutely.
It's kind of a plus, you know?
Hey, you look like your cute brother.
It's like, it's your brother, but boobs.
But boobs and makeup.
He had a little crush on Andrew that he never realized because he's...
On who he thought was Andrew, anyway. Like, that moment in the lake when they, like...
Take your shirt off.
When he's like, take your shirt off. Don't be such a girl, Carson. That was, like, the cutest moment. Like, although I don't like the terminology. I don't like using... Don't somebody's gender identity to shame them for something they're doing or feeling. That was the moment where they connected the most, was when she like starts taking off her gear and she's like, you did not just call me a girl, and shoves him into the water.
Opportunity missed, though. They could have paralleled that scene so well at the very end. They were standing next to a pool. She
I know.
Pushed him into the pool at the end of the movie. Just saying.
You know, and in that moment when they're splashing around in the water, they're having fun, and then suddenly he remembers Farron, which I think is a result of him being like, wow, this is fun. I get to hang out with somebody really cool who I really enjoy, might find kind of sexy, and then shuts it down.
Yeah, I think there was a little tingling.
And, like, why else would he bring up Farron in that moment?
In that moment.
I mean, it's clearly a writing choice because you got to get that line out somewhere. But as a viewer, I reserve the right to assume that it's gay shipping.
Yeah, me too. I think it's just, like, he has those feelings really, really, really repressed because he's in this hyper-masculine environment.
In fact, we do see emotions expressed in this movie, but it's from Andrea. And it's when... her dad finds out that she's been dressing as Andrew to race.
That was the exact moment I was just thinking about.
Were you really?
Yeah.
When she starts to cry and Dean tells her to shut it the fuck down.
Or these guys will tear her apart, which is something they say all the time.
No, he says, or things will get really ugly. And I was like, wow, toxic masculinity.
That sentiment comes up so many times where they're saying, like, these guys will tear you apart.
And it's kind of the same terminology they would use whenever... she was in the beginning when she was presenting as female. Her brother's warning was like, those guys are going to tear you apart just because you're a girl. They'd do anything to beat you. It's like showing femininity in this hyper masculine space is not only looked down upon, but worthy of
destruction.
Attack. Yeah. And, like, we do see when she is presenting as female and she races, somebody actually kicks her off the track. And that doesn't happen again to her until we meet Renee.
Oh, he's bad. Before we get to Renee, can we talk more about her dad?
Oh, God, yes. I have so much to say about the dad.
First thing we see of the dad is this opening where Aaron Carter, or Nick Carter, is doing motocross, and Andrea is doing cheerleading, and it's just like a dichotomy of gender, right? Like, here's masculine, here's feminine, and she wins, and she comes home, and she's like, Andrew, look, I won, and he's excited, and he crashes his bike, and her dad loses his shit on her, never once says a thing to her, like, wow, that's amazing that you guys won. He's just like, stop getting in the way of your brother. He needs to race his bike.
And he doesn't even give a fuck about the fact that she has a massive trophy.
Yeah, and the brother does. He's like, but dad, it's really cool.
Like, she has a massive trophy.
Yeah, and the brother thinks it's really cool, and he's like, no, it's dumb and not bikes.
I really liked that it seems like the brothers did not necessarily inherit their dad's misogyny.
Right.
Because it's the brothers who are often questioning him. Because for some reason, we don't see Andrea actively question him a lot in the beginning. But we do see both of the boys be like, but like, dad, look how cool this trophy is. I was just looking at the trophy. When Andrea and Andrew race, he says, like, maybe this is my fault because I let you race too long. As though, like, letting her race is somehow a diminishing factor of her femininity, and this is his fault for making her masculine. It's this gross thing that he says. I also noticed that Andrea's middle name is Rose. There's one time where her mother middle names her. It's so emblematic of who they see Andrea as.
It grows.
They see her as a delicate fucking flower. Even the dad, like, later on when he does come around, he admits to Andrea that he always wanted to have a daughter so that he wouldn't have to worry about her getting hurt in motocross. But he clearly has a daughter who is interested in motocross, and instead of fostering that interest and that passion, he shied away from it because of his internal feelings about gender.
The mom eventually brings up, like, if you're willing to put one of your children into this danger already, why not the other? Which makes me think about, like, the draft. Because it was, like, explained to me in, like, a women's studies class that the excuse was, you know, isn't it terrible enough for sending our men out there? Do we have to send our women too? And I think, yes, if men have to, based on their gender, why do I get out of it?
That confused so many men's rights activists right now. No, but I'm on that train too. I don't think anybody should have to be drafted.
I don't think anyone should have to, but I think it's unfair that I don't have to.
Then that leads me into another question that I wanted to pose with you guys. How do we define masculinity and femininity today? Like, what are masculine and feminine traits? Because we already know that males and females can both exhibit both of those things. But what do you guys think are core masculine and core feminine?
I don't know.
Traits.
It's almost seems to me as if the words masculine and feminine are a false term that is, like, has a definition, but the thing that it is trying to define is not real.
Let me come back at you. Let's separate masculinity and femininity from gender.
That's how I'm thinking.
Those two can exist separately, because I think that gender is a made-up social construct, but it's made up of femininity and masculinity.
I don't think it is.
You don't think it's real?
I do. I think that men can absolutely be feminine and still be men.
Yeah, I think that femininity and masculinity are real. It's just
obviously.
Yeah, it's just that we've attributed them that, like, feminine is entirely female, masculine is entirely male, where I think that they're real constructs. They're just...
I'm challenging you to challenge that assumption.
Yeah, that it's... they have nothing to do with gender. We've just...
Here's what I'm coming at it from. I'm saying 100,000 years ago, when human behavior started evolving in certain ways, I don't know, you know, 100,000 years ago, that was probably Homo sapiens, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how.
Yeah.
We're not scientists. We're artists.
We were certainly Homo sapiens.
And that over time, over those 100,000 years, the behaviors that, based on sex and gender, were men did this or women did that, that's what, like, would become defined as masculinity or femininity. But those traits are not inherent to, and they are almost, you know, in many ways, like, socialized into them.
Right.
So the definition of masculinity and femininity is just further compartmentalizing of the different sort of socialized behaviors that different genders have learned to behave in.
Right, but I think what you're describing is socialized behaviors, and what I'm describing is traits, like things that are inherent to you.
Right, but I guess, again, how does that have to do with gender, though? In order to describe, like, masculinity and femininity, you have to have, like, some single overarching definition of what, like, traits fit into one or the other. And
we're not talking about gender, though. I know that they've been attributed to certain genders, but that's not what I'm trying to ask you to separate those two things.
I'm not saying femininity has anything to do with being a woman. I think it's been incorrectly attributed to being a woman.
So, okay, I guess I'm saying, what is your definition of femininity, that the linking, that is the link between these definitions that you feel are one?
It's difficult to define, because societally, I've been taught to think, oh, it's womanly things, but, like, I know, like, something that's nurturing is, like, feminine.
Something that is gentle is feminine, as opposed to something that is powerful is masculine.
Yeah, but I'm not saying that, like, women can't be powerful. I'm just saying that, like, that powerful part of me is masculine, but then I also have, like, a feminine powerful part of me. It's just very difficult to define, because we have always defined it within the construct of gender.
And it's a weird, difficult conversation to have, but that's why I wanted to have it.
Those two words are so arbitrary in that, I mean, in that case. They're just kind of arbitrary words.
I disagree, and here's why. Is because I kind of, well, I kind of, I subscribe to a lot of pagan beliefs, and I feel that there is a strong draw to the divine feminine and the divine masculine. And so I have been actually separating these things for a long time. Thinking of masculine energy and feminine energy existing as a collage within in each individual person.
Yeah, and like that's what I was thinking too as well, is from like a pagan standpoint, where there is a feminine energy, there is a masculine energy, and they are very important to every single person. And so in that way, femininity and masculinity is sacred.
Like, what is the difference between, like, if I used a different word, if Zorblardian was feminine and Zorblaxian was masculine, if we just use these two random words, what is the thing that puts one on one side and another on another side?
That's the question.
Yeah, that's what we're asking. Is like, which one would you put on each side?
Okay, well, I genuinely have, well, then, yeah, I mean, I have no clue. I do not have an answer.
Catherine, what would you ascribe to?
Well, I already kind of talked about it, where it's like a nurturing part of me is feminine, but I also am not nurturing at all, so I don't have that feminine part.
What other parts do you feel are
feminine?
A little bit more, or masculine. What parts of you do you feel, and what draw to either extreme do you feel they're attached to?
Well, I like to be prissy sometimes.
Yeah,
and I want to, you know, say this is like, we're not saying them as gendered terms, like anyone can be like this, but it's, you know, sometimes I do just like to do my nails and get dressed up and stuff, and that feels feminine, but that doesn't happen a lot for me. I feel masculine more often than I feel feminine, but I do like freak out over like animals and stuff like that, and that feels feminine to me. My vegetarianism feels feminine to me.
I guess my question is why?
It just does.
I think because, let me just pull out my Wikipedia research, but because we kind of define femininity and masculinity, I guess, as like gentleness and empathy and sensitivity go on this one extreme, and courage and independence and power go on this other side, and we all have to exhibit both of these behaviors in order to function in our world.
But we've been taught that you, based on something that you don't control, that you're born this way, you only exhibit one side of that, where I think the two sides have nothing to do with gender.
And I think that it can. I think that somebody who is very feminine can sometimes decide to transition into a feminine body or into a feminine identity. Some people decide to present more masculine or more feminine. Like for Andrea, she loses very specific things in this movie. She loses her hair. She loses her identity. She loses her NSYNC tickets, and she loses her boy for a while. And all of these things are so feminine. Oh, you know, you and I actually have talked about how liking boy bands
is massively looked down upon
because it's a more feminine type of fandom as opposed to something like a sports fandom. If you follow a sports team, I'm sorry, but you're in a sports fandom.
Yeah, there's no difference. Yeah, it's just as, and I use the word stupid lovingly, but it's just as stupid. It doesn't matter. But it matters because it matters to you. But a woman who's like knows about sports is like, wow, she's super hot. She knows what she's talking about with sports. But a woman who likes One Direction is childish and annoying.
Exactly. And what we saw, how much she really loved NSYNC. Like, she freaked out to the point that all of her family came downstairs to ask her what was wrong when she got her tickets in the mail. But I cannot imagine liking somebody enough to give up my Harry Styles tickets.
Yeah, that's not gonna happen.
That's not gonna happen.
Yeah. We have Harry Styles tickets.
And Catherine and I have Harry Styles tickets for this July, and no boy or girl is coming. Ever gonna get me to give them up.
Yeah, no one's coming between me and my Harry Styles ticket. You know what was interesting? She didn't dress as a woman during that entire stretch of the movie where her dad was gone. She was dressed as a boy the whole time. And then the second he got back, she was dressed as a girl.
And not just dressed as a girl. She suddenly was wearing makeup again. Like, it wasn't just that she was wearing feminine clothes or female, I got big old air quotes going, clothes. But she was actually, like, putting in the effort. Like, anybody who does their makeup knows it takes time, it takes energy, it takes money.
Stupid.
It's a stupid thing that we do. But we do it anyways.
But that's a thing, also, when we were talking about masculinity versus femininity, in like, I had a women's studies class where we figured out, like, how much women spend on beauty every year, and it's so stupid.
It's so bad.
And what I love makeup. I don't wear it much anymore, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I just don't think that it should be expected of women. I think that anyone who wants to wear it should wear it and should have nothing to do with genders.
When the dad does come back, God, what is the moment? It's when he first comes back and Andrea's like, but dad, I can do this. And he says, I will be the laughingstock of the racing community.
Yeah.
And I wrote in all caps, fuck that dad.
Yeah, what?
To care more about his reputation as a coach rather than have a female rider is so offensive to me. And I think that, like,
yeah,
what
rather than support his daughter,
yeah,
it's about him and not her.
Yeah.
And I noticed that in this movie that there's a lot of blatant sexism, blatant enough that, like, even, like, center conservative could register it.
Yeah.
This is not a true expression of sexism and misogyny, because those things are actually very subtle a lot of the time, and there's nothing subtle about it in this movie. So I just wanted to bring that up. But then, so this is the moment where the mom asks the dad if he thinks he's being hypocritical. She says, she calls him a hypocrite.
And it gets to him.
Then, wait, it starts to. He starts to question. But then he turns to his youngest son, the person with the least authority in this question, and says, do you think I'm a hypocrite? This kid doesn't even know what the word means. He says, if it's good, then yes. If it's bad, then no.
That's me.
But he trusts his youngest son's second opinion, which is based solely on good and bad. More than he trusts his wife's. Like, it takes him, his son, not understanding the question before he even
thinks,
considers the fact that he might be being hypocritical. There might be something wrong with the way he's behaving.
Of course not.
How could he be wrong in any way ever?
Well, that's, like, something you learn in sociology super early, is, like, it's so hard to have, the older an adult is, the harder it is to change their mind, because they have so much previous knowledge that they're like, I can't be wrong. I can't have been living my life incorrectly this whole time. I can't have been being bad or hurting people. Right. So clearly it's not true. So that's why it's, like, so hard to get people to be politically correct.
Yeah.
Because they freak out at the idea that they might be hurting people. So clearly this isn't true.
Or even if it is true, it's inconvenient for them. They actually have to go ahead and learn something.
But at the center of it, it's they don't want to believe that they've been hurting anyone, so they shut down.
And I understand that, but, like, I don't know, I feel like I'm not willing to give somebody a pass.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Just because they're afraid that they might be hurt somebody.
It seems to me kind of like it's the somebody who says they are not willing to hurt someone, but aren't willing to examine what not hurting someone means.
Yeah,
right.
And in and of its, and like, in and of itself, that shows that Like, if you're not willing to examine what it means to be hurting someone, you are not doing your due diligence in terms of not hurting people.
For sure.
Right.
So you don't really believe what you're saying, you know?
And I, like, really respect people who are older and trying. Like, even if they don't get the terminology always right. Like, I have a distant cousin who I follow on Facebook, and she would post things that I was like, oh, you're so close.
Yeah.
But you're trying. And I respect those people a hell of a lot more than I respect. Well, I have no respect for people who just can't be bothered to respect other people.
But I also hate everybody.
Yeah.
All right, that's fair. I don't want. Here's a new thing I want to do in my life for self care. Okay. I don't want anybody in my life anymore.
What?
I just don't want anybody. I want everyone to leave me alone.
Do you want us to leave you alone?
I think I want to exist in an egg of ooze. Where no one can get to me. I feel like femininity can be described as everything getting something ready for the slaughter. Mm-hmm. And masculinity is the slaughter. How's that?
That's a lot.
Homo sapiens.
Okay, so can I just say that I was actually, Robin knows this, I said it on the phone to him, I was very nervous about this movie because it came out the same year as The Luck of the Irish, and that was
which
so
was
tone deaf.
Not
and I was
woke.
Like, oh God, this is not gonna be good.
Yeah.
And I like remembered enjoying it, so I was like, oh no, this is gonna be another Luck of the Irish experience.
We're just gonna undo every stitch of our childhood. Painful.
And then I watched it and it was like, no, the women in this movie are actually very strong and they're breaking out of those roles and they're like, this is a much, air quotes again, woker movie, even though it was about like well-off white people.
Yeah. I felt like this movie was saying that having children is for racing them.
I would argue that that is true from the father's perspective, absolutely. But from the mother's perspective.
But just then thinking of like everyone I grew up around, I was like, I mm-hmm. think the only reason to have kids is to race them against everyone else's kids.
Oh,
which,
like the
once again
rat race of life.
Once again, another reason to not have children. Homo sapiens. That's what I got from the movie.
Homo sapiens.
Just don't add no more Homo sapiens.
Oh dear God.
That's what no homo really means.
No more people? No more people?
No,
we good? Okay, okay.
I like...
It's because they're admitting that when two guys hit on each other and say no homo, it's not because they're saying they're not gay. It's because
we
they're saying, I don't want to have kids.
We
are,
will
in?
Not procreate from this. I'm just going to start handing out like condoms yelling, no homo, no homo, no homo.
Please don't, actually. That sounds so bad.
I absolutely think you should do that.
No, please don't.
Just go to a college campus somewhere.
We're taking back no homo.
Yeah.
It's no more homo sapiens. Don't breed. Your kids will be thrust into a tormenting life of motocross races and Italian pop singer demons and bikini bottom atoll. Oh, we haven't talked about motocross in near a year
in days.
Now. Yeah.
I guess that's all we had to say about it.
It's as if we had little to say about motocross.
No, we actually talked a lot about it.
I think even as I was watching this movie, I got the sense that there was not going to be as much to say. I felt like it was going to be a shorter recording time anyway, just because it is very much face value film. That's one of the reasons that I kept remarking to Kylie, the writers did a really good job with this. There's not much to go deeper on because the things that they want you to go deeper on, they have brought out very strongly. Like the father arc where he goes from being like that total absolute jerk at the beginning, we know we're supposed to hate him and see it as wrong, to like the redemption where now that we see him accepting that his daughter can be this person, we're supposed to like him again. To the fact that, like, the boys literally kick her during that first race just to show how rough a world it can be out there and how she really does need to fight and everything. It's all very much like they have done a good job of planting the issues that they want to plant with firm feet on the ground and show you what the movie wants to show you.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, it shows that, like, you can play the boy games, but it doesn't challenge your own femininity. I mean, she still gets the guy at the end. They call her beautiful throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm. She doesn't actually change. She just puts on a different identity for a little while and then reverts back to who she was. And I feel like the stories that we're more interested in now are more consequential than that.
Yeah, well, what might you change about this movie?
I mean, I already brought up earlier before, but I would have loved to have seen some sort of queer experience. I would have liked to see this as a trans story where, like, this is a feminine presenting person who for some reason had to identify as masculine, but realize actually that's where their heart and soul lies, is in this masculine
transition
identity. And then possibly having some sort of transition, like a transition story would be very interesting to me today, because like that, those are the stories that aren't getting told. We've seen the white woman struggle and overcome and then revert back to her ways several times over. It seems like deeper art when we're telling stories that we haven't already heard.
You know what time that means?
What does that time mean?
Fan mail.
Slap a clock.
Slap a clock.
Slap a clock.
Fan mail.
Fan mail. This first one's from my horoscope.
Robin posted on our Twitter, "Is this a fern with a photograph?" And I'm still curious about that.
I don't think it's a fern.
I actually made a poll on the Twitter with the options, "Of course it is," and
"No."
"What the hell, no?" And then "other, please specify."
I don't think it's a fern.
I want to see who won, actually. So, "other, please specify" won, but we got no responses. Or that means we get to make up our own answer.
We don't get to make up our own answer. That's nature, Kylie.
It says, "Please specify." We have to specify. And if they won't, then we must.
Nature is a real thing. You don't just gotta make things up about it.
It was a yes or no question, Robin.
Is that a fern or no?
Is it?
Yeah, it's still a yes or no question.
No, my question...
Is it a fern?
There's actually 8 hours and 52 minutes left on the poll. So, you know, you never know who might jump on in there.
You never know which nefarious soul might post something to the poll.
Catherine, did you vote?
I just said it's a fern.
Robin, here's the thing. You posted, "Is it a fern? Find out on our next episode." So you need to tell us the answer.
It's a fern.
Kylie, is it a fern?
It's not a fern.
Not a fern.
I've seen plants before.
You've been listening to Grow Up, a Saturday morning podcast for nubile millennials, with me, Beanie Birthday Boy.
Me, Maddie Gray.
And I am Kath Thorne in your side, Johnson. Next week, please keep off of the grass, shine your shoes, wipe your face, and join us in a swamp filled with fairy tale creatures as we watch Shrek.